we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
Mayors in Spain's restive region of Catalonia face prosecution by the national government for voicing their support for next month's independence referendum.
Remember that when a citizen has a problem with justice, that's just one citizen with a problem. But when 712 mayors have a problem with justice, it's justice that has the problem. In this case, it's Spanish justice and not the 712 mayors, because this has never been seen in Europe, at least in democratic Europe.
Well, I think most people would agree that the situation in Catalonia is of concern. I hope that there will be dialogue between the Catalan and the Spanish governments to try to resolve this situation. That has got to be preferable to the sight of police officers seizing ballot papers and entering newspaper offices. It is, of course, entirely legitimate for Spain to oppose independence for Catalonia. But what I think is of concern anywhere is for a state to seek to deny the right of a people to democratically express their will. The right of self-determination is an important international principle, and I hope very much that it will be respected in Catalonia and everywhere else. Finally, Presiding Officer, of course, the Edinburgh Agreement is a shining example of two governments with diametrically opposed views on independence, nevertheless coming together to agree a process that allowed the people to decide. And I think that offers a template that could be used by others elsewhere in the world.
We are living in an age of nationalisms and a resurgence of the belief in the principle of self-determination as the driver of human progress amid the chaos and flux authored by the collapse of a neoliberal status quo and concomitant rise in anger, fear, confusion and insecurity. And what should not be overlooked is that as a doctrine, nationalism is an empty vessel. What marks its specific character in any age or time are the politics poured into this vessel, determining whether a given nationalist movement or politics is progressive or regressive in scope. There is a marked difference, for example, or at least there is as far as I am concerned, between the inclusive, outward-looking nationalism that underpinned the campaign for Scottish independence in 2014 and the exclusive, inward-looking variant which fuelled Brexit in 2016. There is also a marked difference between the nationalism of an oppressed people and that of their oppressor. The very dynamic that informs the difference between Palestinian nationalism, defined by a 50-year struggle against occupation, ethnic cleansing, apartheid, and ultimately self-determination, and the Israeli nationalism responsible for their oppression and denial of that self-determination. But not every campaign or movement for self-determination is worthy of support. The breaking up of states on the basis of a principle enshrined in the UN Charter, but which reaches back centuries more, has at various points been the catalyst for civil wars, ethnic cleansing, and even genocide, informing an unthinking and base tribalism capable of pushing entire societies and peoples into the abyss. Ultimately, the sage words of the legendary Scottish trade union leader Jimmy Reid continue to ring true. Nationalism, he said, is like electricity. It can kill a man in the electric chair, or it can keep a baby alive in an incubator. Which brings us to events in Catalonia, northeastern Spain, home to 7.5 million people, and where a tenacious and long-standing campaign for independence has reached a point of critical mass with the decision of the Catalonian government to hold a referendum to decide the region's future as either a region of Spain as it is now, or to go it alone as an independent state. The only problem, at least as far as the Spanish government in Madrid is concerned, is that the referendum on Catalonian independence, scheduled to take place on Sunday, October 1st, is illegal and unconstitutional. A ruling responsible for Spanish police and gendarmes being unleashed with the aim of disrupting and preventing it from taking place. In a country and society forever scarred by the civil war it endured in the mid-1930s, which ended in General Franco and fascism taking power, the sight of troops attempting to suppress the attempt to hold a democratic referendum in Catalonia, regardless of its rights and wrongs, is, to say the least, not a good look. However, with both the Spanish government and its Catalonian counterpart entrenched in their respective positions, the stage is set not for a referendum, but civil unrest of a kind which in Spain conjures up the ghosts of a tortured past. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Well, joining me to help us unpick the events in Catalonia, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Juan Verges Gifra. He is in Catalonia right now. He's an expert on these matters and an expert on the principle of self-determination and constitutional affairs. Juan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks to be invited to be here.
Before we get into the events as they are just now, as I said in my introduction, things are very tense, to say the least. Give us a brief outline of the history of the movement for Catalonian independence, if you would.
Well, that's a long story, but to tell a long story short, I would say the beginning of this last stage in the movement for independence started 7 years ago in 2010, when the Spanish Constitutional Court issued a ruling where it stated very clearly that the Catalan Statute of Autonomy that was passed both in the Catalan Parliament and in the Spanish Parliament and was even passed a referendum here in Catalonia, the ruling of the Spanish Constitutional Court in 2010 said that it was unconstitutional, that there were at least 14 totally unconstitutional articles and many other articles that should be interpreted in a restrictive way. That was the last offense for many people in Catalonia, and people started organizing, and that percentage of people in Catalonia who have always been independentist, but this percentage, this minority, started raising, right now it's half the population, if not more. That's what actually people in Catalonia would like to know: how many of independentist people are there that they want to build a new country, a republic.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed by the sight of million and more people regularly hitting the streets in Catalonia, Barcelona and other cities in the region in support of independence. But I'm minded of the Yes campaign for Scottish independence in 2014, which I actually opposed then. I support it now, but that's another story. And the Yes campaign, undoubtedly, if you were judging it by the presence in the streets and the level of enthusiasm and activism, you would have thought approaching the referendum in 2014 that it was going to be yes and that Scotland would be independent. But there was a silent majority that swung it in favour of no. Is it the same dynamic in Catalonia, that the no support is quiet based because they don't want to come out because it's essentially a negative vote? There's not the sense of enthusiasm, but they're scared of what independence could entail, scared, if you will, of the unknown. Is there a similar dynamic there coming into play?
More or less. I mean, but there is a big difference here. I mean, since there has been no agreement between the Catalan and the Spanish government on doing an agreed referendum, that's a big difference. I mean, that's on the side of those who oppose on the other side of those who are campaigning for the yes, there you have people who are for the no, and also people who are simply there seeing what's happening.
Yes.
And some of these people would simply, they would agree to a new status, to a new republic. Some of them would oppose that new status, but the thing is that we don't know. I mean, what we clearly know is that there are millions of people campaigning for the yes, that there are millions of people who want this referendum, either unilateral or agreed to take place, and we don't know what the other people are thinking. That's why the Catalan government would like to have an agreed referendum. Since that is not possible, next Sunday we're going to have this 1st of October unilateral referendum.
It's essential that we get to the heart of this issue. Why is the Spanish government denying the right of the Catalonian people to hold this referendum, given there seems to be popular support that the government of Catalonia, its president, Carles Puigdemont, has called it? He supports the referendum and the right for the people to decide their constitutional future. The Spanish Prime Minister in Madrid, Mariano Rajoy, he's the Prime Minister, leader of the People's Party, which is a centre-right party. What is the dynamic here between the two of those leaders? Why is the Spanish government in Madrid denying the right of the Catalonian people to hold this referendum?
That's a very good question, and that's a question I guess any person being democratic, any person favoring democracy is going to have to ask this question. But formally, there is the fact that the Spanish Constitution, in its Article 2, states that the Spanish Constitution, our Carta Magna, is, I'm quoting, is based upon the unbreakable unity of the Spanish nation. That led the Spanish Constitutional Court to conclude that any kind of referendum raising the issue of a possible secession by any part, by any region in Spain, is automatically unconstitutional. The Article 2 of the Spanish Constitution, the one I just quoted, was literally introduced by the Spanish military in 1978. That is, when there was not yet a democracy in Spain.
Franco died in 1975, I believe, but there was an interregnum before democracy reappeared.
There was this interregnum led where the Prime Minister was Adolfo Suárez. And in this interregnum, the different political parties, they met and they wrote down the Spanish Constitution. Well, some of these people who were there in the meeting writing down the draft of the Constitution, they have explained later in their memories that when they were starting writing the Constitution, they received a note from the military stating, unless you introduce this in the Carta Magna, in the Constitution, we are not going to allow democracy to come to Spain. And the phrase, the article they wanted willingly to be introduced in the Spanish Constitution stated that the Spanish Union is indissoluble, is unbreakable. And the Spanish Constitutional Court seizes to that, uses that article, which is a part of the Constitution, in order to say, well, no, there is an impossibility, it is not possible at all within this constitutional to hold a referendum on secession. That's the formal obstacle to holding any kind of referendum in Spain. Now, the question is this article and the way the rule of law in Spain has been going on for the last 40 years, is this rule of law democratic from the very principle? Well, I think not. And what the Spanish Constitutional Court has asserted is that, okay, if this article should be rephrased or changed, or if there is any force, any political movement that aims at changing the Spanish constitutional, the Spanish Constitution, there is a way to do it. There is some political and judiciary mechanisms in order to change it. For the Catalans, that is an impossibility. That's a no way. From a realistic point of view, it is impossible that political parties would ever favor any kind of modification of the Spanish Constitution in order to allow for any region in Spain to hold ever a referendum on self-determination. That's the story.
So there's a constitutional and political deadlock that's long-standing, but as Victor Hugo once famously said, there is nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come. We have to stop there for a short break, Juan. We'll come back after the break. I'd like to get into how the history of the Spanish Civil War may feed into this issue today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
Hard Facts.
Welcome back to the second half of this episode of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down with Professor Juan Vergés Gifra. We are discussing events in Catalonia which are poised to result in civil unrest unless either the Catalonian government led by President Carles Puigdemont or the Spanish government in Madrid led by Mariano Rajoy blinks and rolls back from their respective entrenched positions with regard to the right of the Catalonian people to hold a referendum which has been called unilaterally to be held on Sunday the 1st of October. Now Juan, I mentioned in my introduction the Spanish Civil War. I don't think you can discuss this issue without delving into the Spanish Civil War. We know that during that war, 1936-1938, that Catalonia was 39, my apologies. Catalonia was a pillar of resistance to Franco and to fascism. It suffered enormously as a consequence. The language was suppressed. The culture was suppressed. Any autonomy was proscribed. Now, do the scars of that war, the 1936-1939 war, they run deep? How are they feeding into this issue today, if at all?
Yeah, I've just explained that why in the Spanish Constitution we have this Article 2, where it is clearly stated that the Spanish nation is a union that can never be broken, and that was... That article was introduced by the military, those who were actually favoring Francoism, Franco dictatorship, and who opposed democracy. That's a fact. But there are other aspects that one can refer to in order to explain to people from abroad how these Francoism attitude, I mean, how Francoist attitudes are still lingering in today's Spanish politics. I will give you an example. Since the Catalan government is saying that it is going to organize this referendum next Sunday, the Spanish government has tried to seize control of the Catalan policemen, which are well equipped and they are competent, and they are the policemen who actually stopped terrorists last month. This police corps is a worry for the Spanish government. They want to seize control of this police corps. Now, the question is, who are they proposing for seizing control of these Catalan policemen? A person who is the brother of the former president of the Constitutional Court, who are, both of them, sons of a former phalangist, a fascist.
Wow.
A person who actually ran for a candidate in the 1977 general elections. I mean, and who was clearly not only Francoist, was the extremist right-wing member of the force opposing democracy. So this person has a brother who's actually being proposed as the person who has seized control of the Catalan police force.
That's clearly a provocation, surely.
For many Catalans, it is. This is clearly a provocation. Needless to say, Populist Party, the People's Party, who's actually today running Spain, they are clearly against Catalanism. I mean, this is a fact, and any historian can tell it. I mean, you have to bear in mind that the Popular Party, People's Party, Rajoy's party, is the fifth or the sixth force in Catalonia. It has never been an important political party in Catalonia. Never.
Can I just make this point, because I did some research and it's very interesting. Mariano Rajoy, the current Prime Minister, he was a minister in the government of José María Aznar, the notorious right-wing Spanish Prime Minister, who was undone by his attempt to blame the 2006 Madrid bombing on Basque separatist ETA when it was in fact Salafi jihadis, because he attached himself to the foreign policy of George W. Bush when it came to Iraq and the Middle East in the wake of 9/11. So that brought him down. So you would have thought that Mariano Rajoy would have been implicated in what was a humiliating and egregious attempt to use a terrorist attack to carry out an internal political agenda against another separatist movement in the Basque country. But yet here he is popping up as the country's prime minister, driving this anti Catalan campaign from Madrid, whipping up all kinds of anti-Catalonian sentiment, I would imagine, in the country, supported by his media acolytes. And so it can only ever be a recipe for disaster. Do you think he's actively trying to spark some kind of civil unrest, some kind of justification, some kind of pretext so that he can send in the troops? Do you think it's possible?
Hopefully not. I mean, but any rational person, I mean, that's our worry. I mean, that's the worry of many people today in Catalonia, that there are going to be not only one, but some cases for provocation. I mean, the Spanish government is going to deeply have to face their own temptation to provoke something. I mean, one can notice that from many points of view, that they are starting using bad weapons and dirty ways of dealing with this. I mean, we didn't talk about that, but for the last 7 years, the Spanish government minister, the person who rules over the police corps and the police forces, this ministry have already been using money and people in order to discredit illegally. And Catalan politicians, they've announced, for example, they've by using their acolytes, as you said, the press acolytes, they've been stating that some Catalan leaders had money either in Switzerland or in other paradises, financial paradises, in order to discredit them. I mean, there have been a media war there in order to discredit these people. So if they've been doing this for the last 7 years, what else could they do? Well, everyone knows that any state has a lot of possibilities in trying to control their people, even these kind of dirty means. So it might be. That's a possibility. That's why the independentist movement is once and again, we receive it every day, messages saying, don't be provoked. I mean, let those who are going to provoke you go alone. I mean, don't pay attention to them. Just be peaceful. Just never respond. Never respond any kind of provocation, because that's what they are looking for. And I don't know what kind of provocation are they going to use. I'm sure they are going to use some ways of provocation, but hopefully they are going to keep being peaceful.
Can I now come on to the ideology that's driving the movement for Catalonian independence? I mentioned the Catalonian president, Carles Puigdemont. He's on the right of the political spectrum, I believe. So where is the left in this?
Centre-right.
Where is the left in this? Podemos, the Spanish far-left formation, they've come out in support, I believe, for the right of the Catalonian people to hold a referendum, but they support a no vote in that referendum. There is a campaign against the referendum titled Recortes Cero. I believe this is from the left also. Could you give me the split between left and right within Catalonia? I mean, is there a broad support left and right for this referendum? What is its dynamic? Would you say broadly progressive? Give me an outline, please, if you would, on the driving ideologies behind this movement.
Yeah, it is a transversal. I mean, from a ideological point of view, it is a transversal movement. I mean, today's Catalan president, prime minister, is a center-right politician. Both the two or the three most important parties in Spain, they are, so to speak, clearly nationalist parties, with particular and small differences. For example, the Socialist Party would favor dialogue with the Catalan government. There are a lot of nuances there.
Juan, can I just interject here? I want to know the extent to which economic issues are playing into this question. The Catalonian population of 7.5 million constitutes 20% of Spain's total population of 46.5 million. And I believe that Catalonia is responsible for 20% of Spain's national income. Now, I'm hearing stories that there's some resentment over this dynamic, over this state of affairs, that the Catalonians feel that they are contributing more than their fair share to Spain's national income at a time when unemployment has never been higher. Is it 50% amongst young people in Spain are unemployed? So is there a narrative whereby some within Catalonia believe that they are essentially subsidising the rest of Spain or Spain's benefit system to help pay for those who are unemployed? Because I'm hearing that this is a source of resentment in Catalonia. What are your thoughts on that, please?
Yeah, That's a fact. I mean, some people, like myself, for example, I don't like this kind of argument, the economy, this kind of, this saying that Spain is robbing us, I mean, that they are stealing Catalan resources. I don't like this kind of argument, but it is a fact. It is true that many people in Catalonia, maybe not the majority, maybe that's not the most important reason. I would say that the most important reason in Catalan separatism is a reason of dignity, a moral reason,
yes,
for the most part. But it is true that the Spanish government for many years have been dealing with Catalonia just as a colony, in the sense of, well, there is a place, that's what actually Franco did. And so Catalonia had no power, but Catalonia was the factory, just like the Basque Country. Catalonia and the Basque Country, they were the places where factories and where industry could prosper and be developed. There are different reasons that help explaining that. One reason might be that, well, war has never been a blessing thing in the Catholic world, and it is a better thing just to, well, stroll around and speak and enjoy arts, and working is a rather Protestant and Calvinist thing.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but I'm really minded to ask, because this was an argument that was put to the Scottish people in advance of the referendum that we had in 2014, that Scotland doesn't have the means to go it alone. Scotland's too small to be able to survive as an independent country. Give me your view when it comes to Catalonia on that question. Could Catalonia survive, thrive and prosper as an independent state in the 21st century?
Yeah, I'm sure about that. Yeah, I think so. And most economists, they agree with that. I mean,
okay.
I think there's no question there.
You've been listening to Professor Juan Vergi Gifra. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.